This is Akashvani. In the weekly program, Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on key highlights of Prime Minister's visit to Nigeria, Brazil and Guyana. The participants are C. Rajashekhar, former ambassador, Atul Aneja, strategic analyst, and Sakshi Singh, Akashvani correspondent. The moderator is Deeksha Saxena, Akashvani correspondent.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi recently concluded his three-nation visit to Nigeria, Brazil and Guyana. In Brazil, the Prime Minister also attended the 19th G20 summit as a Troika member. To discuss more on this today, we are joined by Ambassador C. Rajashekhar, Mr. Atul Aneja, strategic analyst, and Akashvani correspondent Ms. Sakshi Singh, who covered the G20 in Rio de Janeiro. Welcome to the studio all.
Thank you.
To begin with, Mr. Aneja, I would like to ask you, in the last 17 years, the trip to the African nation was the first by an Indian Prime Minister. I'm talking about Nigeria. And Nigeria's second highest national award, the Grand Commander of the Order of Niger, was also conferred on Prime Minister Modi in Abuja. He became the first foreign leader to receive the award since 1969. Both the countries have a strategic partnership. How significant, in your opinion, has this visit been when it comes to strengthening the partnership between the two nations?
Extremely important, this particular visit. If you recall, when India hosted the G20 summit, it was very clear that our focus would be on Global South. And within Global South, it was Africa. You would recall that during that G20 summit, the African Union, so I think 55 or 56 countries, collectively became part of the G20. The Prime Minister had made it very clear that going forward, India would be the bridge between the North and the South, the East and the West, and with focus on the Global South. Now comes the question of walking the talk. And I see the visit to Nigeria as an elaboration, as an illustration of our commitment to Africa. Specifically, Nigeria is important because Nigeria is one of the heavyweights of Africa. So Nigeria carries a lot of weight and gravitas. And second thing is, it is also extremely resource-rich. Its oil and gas reserves are well known. And because of certain conflicts which are taking place in West Asia, North Africa, there is added impulse for India to diversify its energy security base. And Nigeria fits into that scheme as well. There are other areas as well. You know, if you really see, Nigeria is battling terrorism. The Boko Haram group is very active out there. So that's another plank which connects India and Nigeria. And actually, fourthly, even if you see in terms of soft power, we have the Indian film industry, Bollywood, but Nigeria has Nollywood, and they're doing pretty well. I have seen some of them on the internet. So that could be another area, culture and cinema, which could bring us together. I think the Prime Minister also announced scholarships for Nigerian students. So there's need for a people-to-people connect, which was realized, and some action has been taken to create a platform for that to take place in substantial numbers.
Ambassador Rajashekhar, Mr. Aneja spoke about the people-to-people connect. But when it comes to the bilateral ties between the two nations, money matters a lot. So it brings me to my next question. The bilateral trade between the two countries is more than $14 billion annually. And Nigeria is India's largest trading partner in Africa. Ambassador, would you please throw some light on trade relations which both the countries share and the potential areas where both the nations are eyeing to enhance the cooperation? Also, can you please talk about the MOUs which were signed during the recent visit?
Mr. Atul Aneja Sahab has referred to the changes in geopolitical backdrop necessitating our energy diversification. In that context, also Nigeria fits in as a natural partner for us. I had the privilege of, at the headquarters of the Ministry of External Affairs, overseeing relations with Nigeria. It was reporting to us. And it also has 60,000 Indians there, and it has great potential. It's a natural partner for us because it has oil resources, and we precisely need, and we produce and export all that Nigeria needs and imports. For example, even the beginning from oil, the oil refined products, aviation fuel and diesel and other products, they do import. And also healthcare is an area where pharmaceuticals and health education, hospitals. Now the new thing is the DPI, the fintech. The social inclusion also needs financial inclusion, where, you know, India is looked upon, as India has managed to lift almost a quarter billion people from below the poverty line in the last 10 years. And the kind of socio-economic transformation that India is going through is something that Nigeria aspires to emulate. That's why they look up to the honor, grand honor that they had conferred on our Honorable Prime Minister. It reflects the respect they hold our Prime Minister, our government and our people. Plus, their expectation from India that they would like to emulate the great developmental journey that India is now going through.
Moving on to the next destination of the three-nation tour of the Prime Minister, we would now like to take a halt in Brazil. G20 declaration addresses social inclusion, fight against hunger and poverty, the taxation of billionaires, measures for the energy transition, the global governance reform and the acceleration of the climate action. First of all, Ambassador Rajashekar and Mr. Aneja, briefly, could you talk about all these pointers and specifically what implications does this declaration have for developing countries, especially the energy transition and taxing the billionaires?
In large measure, the Brazil G20 summit is a continuation of the last G20 summit that we have very successfully hosted. And Brazil has much acknowledged that they continued the theme of one earth, one family and one future, that they have taken it to the next step of inclusive development, especially focusing on SDGs. Sustainable developmental goals. In that context, the energy is important because of the ongoing two wars in Europe and in West Asia. There is extra burden on fuel and fertilizer and food. So initially we had come up 2016 January, you may recall, the International Solar Alliance, now the Global Biofuel Alliance, because Brazil is the manufacturing, you know, global manufacturing hub. So it has taken lead in terms of mixing methanol and reducing the need for hydrocarbon. So in fact, India is also going in that direction. This may be also a useful model for other fellow developing, especially those countries which are importing hydrocarbons. Then also the continuation is the taxing the billionaires more. While the global economy's development growth is one aspect, distribution is another thing. By now, it has been universally acknowledged. In fact, at Davos, the billionaires themselves asked, why don't you tax us more? So if we don't tax and we don't respond to that, it would be shame and unfair thing. So it's a natural for them to take this forward. And particularly, I would like to note that our developmental revolution that is happening, socio-economic transformation that is happening in India, this has gone down very well among the G20 summit and participants. And I may say that the stature of India has further gone up a few notches.
Mr. Aneja, your comments on the G20 declaration this year?
As Ambassador Rajashekar has said, this is build-up or elaboration in a way of what was accomplished when India hosted the G20 summit. And of course, the Global South focus remains, which India had flagged off during when it hosted the G20 summit. Energy transition, interesting. I have just one take on this, that while there is so much of focus on solar alliance, and rightly so, solar and wind and other forms, I think one form of energy, clean energy, is nuclear. I really feel that it produces the energy flux that is required to power the demand for energy is going to go enormously as the Global South comes into its own. So to provide that energy flux, we need all forms of energy. I think it's prudent that as we transition and give more focus to renewables, nuclear should be included into that. But I also feel that we should not turn our back entirely on oil and gas. It is important, especially gas is a very clean fuel. So we need to have a very prudent mix of renewables, of course, increasing focus on renewables, along with clean hydrocarbons as well. And I think renewables, nuclear is important. So it's important that the focus has come on energy transition, and it's a right way to go forward, anticipating the huge demand of on power as the Global South comes into its own.
Do you feel with the ever-turning global order, G20, how is it trying to keep itself relevant?
It's an important question. You see, you recall when the New Delhi G20 took place. I thought that at that time, the G20 was facing an existential threat. the lack of focus. But I think that when we clubbed on, that docked the global south with the future of G20, I think that gave new meaning and identity to G20. So I don't see that kind of a threat coming to the G20 anymore. It has a focus, it can draw its own roadmap to the way forward. The only thing is, maybe a problem for the G20 is if you are going to give too much of political focus, if you are trying to reconcile Russia and Ukraine as a make or break agenda. Now, these are going to be the problems which are likely to come. My own view is that the G20 should remain an economic and a geo-economic grouping rather than a geopolitical one. And so long as it remains geo-economic, keeps its focus on global south, I think it has a bright future.
Moving on to our correspondent Sakshi, who was in Rio de Janeiro covering the important grouping of all the world leaders. Sakshi, I would like to ask you specifically about the two sessions which were addressed by our Prime Minister during the 2 days in the G20 summit.
So Deeksha, there were total four sessions that we have. The first one was on the Global Alliance Against Hunger and Poverty, which was the key initiative under Brazil's presidency. So during his address, Prime Minister focused that it's an extension of what was said in the Delhi Declaration. He addressed that there have been many actions that Indian government has taken, like bringing some 250 million people out of poverty, giving food grains to 800 million. So he showed that India is committed on this concept, and he congratulated the president that such initiative, such global alliance is taking place. But he also focused on one major point. When we're talking about global south, it's global south which is being affected by these issues of fertilizers. So the concept of hunger and poverty is much more concern when we're talking about global south. Then we had other session which was on the first day. It was about bringing out governance reforms in the Governance Institute. Then there was the other session which was addressed by the Prime Minister, and it was on sustainable development and energy transition. Here also, the major focus of Prime Minister was that India is committed, be it on the level of at our domestic level or be it at a global level. Then he talked about certain schemes that we have taken place and which India is following at both the level. He talked about Mission Life was there. Then he talked about International Solar Alliance. Then we had the Biofuel Alliance, which becomes important because India and Brazil, they have a very solid relationship talking about biofuel. Then, and one major point he underlined was regarding Paris Agreement, that how India is one of the foremost countries which have met the targets of Paris Agreements already, and we have an ambitious target of reaching 500 gigawatts of clean energy by 2030. So overall, these were the major sessions. There was a fourth session on digital infrastructure as well. So of the total four sessions that were held in G20, these two major ones were addressed by Prime Minister Modi.
If I may continue on the G20. So G20 is a natural progression because 1945, there was P5, permanent five prominent members politically around the world. Then G7, economic powerhouses, which later included Russia to take it G8, plus the economically vibrant nations like India, Brazil, you know, other developing countries, Indonesia. And all. So this adequately broad basis to address the challenges that we face. And the important task is, as Atulji has rightly mentioned, to ensure that the political fault lines do not derail this process. That so far G20 has been very successfully doing. In fact, last year there was a major cloud whether Delhi will be able to pull out an agreeable conciliatory joint statement between Russia and the West, which we have done. That means the Sherpas throughout the year, you know, they keep working all along, not only between the summits like September last year and November this year. So this is a constant work in progress. Therefore, G20, I would say, has come to stay. The challenge is that we have to carefully navigate the political fault lines.
What, in your opinion, Mr. Aneja and Ambassador Rajshekar, what in your opinion is India standing at the global level? Because India is trying to play a role of the key change maker when it comes to Solar Alliance. How is the world looking up to India as a key change maker? Your opinions first, Ambassador.
So first of all, India has succeeded in placing the concerns of the global south, and also Prime Minister's emphatic statement that ours is not era of war, which has resonated very well, you know, among all chancelleries around the world, that we need to, despite our differences, we should not allow them to become conflicts and wars. That is the central theme, is, you know, gaining traction among the developing countries. And also that is propelling India into leadership role, that the president of Guyana in his joint statement in Georgetown has mentioned, looked at Prime Minister Modi and he said, here is our champion leader. That's the word he has used. And the kind of honors that Prime Minister is bestowed, this shows that, you know, these countries are looking up to India. When I joined diplomacy three and a half decades ago, we used to look up to East Asian miracle. So our whatever has happening socio-economic transformation in India is no less a miracle. That a country of 1.4 billion people harmoniously working out our destiny through democracy and dialogue, which is itself is a statement on world stage. That's what Prime Minister has mentioned in his address to G20, that we have lifted 250 million people out of poverty, and we provide food grains to 800 million people, and we provide health care and farm crop insurance, all these things. So these are very worthy models, developmental templates for the countries to emulate. This you see more and more. That is propelling India's stature on the global stage. And our team is working very hard. We must congratulate them.
Mr. Aneja, I would like to add on to this question of mine, and I would like to ask you, since Sakshi spoke about the Prime Minister's address on digital infrastructure and AI, India is a big country, a large market. How important it is for India, as well as how can India help navigate through the challenges which will come in near future when it comes to dealing with the AI, or how is it important for us to strengthen the digital infrastructure?
Diksha, you see, if India is seen and taken in high esteem, there is underlying sentiment behind it. India injects hope in the international system. And that's important because you have to look at the context. We had the COVID pandemic and so much of negativity, tragedies people faced. Even during COVID, you know, as Ambassador was saying, healthcare, we provided medicines and vaccines to more than 150 countries. I mean, we fought the pandemic and gave hope. I think that message went across about India being a different model. Along with them came the slogans, you know, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. It essentially means world is one family, means avoid conflicts. The problems of the world are so big. You talked about climate change, you know, even terrorism. There is no single country which can fight it on its own. Unless the world gets together on this positive agenda, we're not going to solve this problem. That messaging also, the outlook, you see, if you really look at it, is an attack on hard geopolitics. Because hard geopolitics thinks of your interests first and others later. Here is a very different cooperative model of international politics, where you connect, where you see commonalities, and you try and build bridges to achieve common goals which humanity faces. I would also say the individual charisma and personality of the Prime Minister comes into the picture here. His connect with not only domestically, but when he goes abroad, it's there to see. Sakshi must have seen it in, you know, G20 summit. We were on television. We saw what happened in Guyana. It's an electrifying connection which he draws, whether he's talking to children or he's talking to heads of state. And other countries, especially in the global south, are catching on to that. Then what is different now, Diksha, is that we are going into new domains of collaboration. And that's where we come to the DPI, Digital Public Infrastructure. If I'm from Guyana or from Barbados, I say, look, we are also a developing country, but these guys have done it. You know, the payment system is so seamless, OpenAI, and then, you know, so much of, and it ultimately translates into rapid economic development. FinTech is one area. AI, you spoke about it. I mean, these are areas which are coming from a developing country. The startup culture. This is something which will immediately appeal to young populations. You know, we're talking of Gen Z, millennials, more Gen Z than millennial now. It will find a resonance there. So this is an inclusive model. You carry everyone. As Ambassador was saying, you know, India, its own journey from poor country to an emerging economy and a country which aspires by 2047 to be a developed country is a remarkable journey. And India becomes now a model for the global south to emulate. Along with them is the culture of transparency, you know, culture of democracy, which is not Western-style democracy. As the Prime Minister said, we are a mother of democracy. It goes into our civilizational ethos. So, you know, that these are various, various attributes which are making into a champion nation, really, to follow. And what President Farman Ali said, I think it came totally from the heart about India. So I think we are in a very, very good sweet spot space right now. And there is nothing else but to look forward to the journey we have embarked.
I'm sure this is quite an encouraging news, not just for us sitting in the studio, but also for our listeners. I would now like to bring in Sakshi. She has some more to add on to this. And then I have a few more questions for you, Sakshi.
I just want, like what Ambassador said, I just want to add two main points to it. Talking about PM's, you know, charisma, aura. So on the sidelines of G20, he brought all the leaders together. And one line was said that when we're talking about DIPR, digital infrastructure, all AI, all this is necessary to reach our sustainable goals. And it was not him alone, but all so many nations. It includes Switzerland, it includes heads of different states. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, there's this fund called Global Digital Inclusive Fund. So when we're talking about these kind of infrastructure, we are talking about AI, G20 looks at it that such kind of infrastructure should be met in an inclusive manner. So this fund is all about how we can support the developing nations to build on these infrastructure, these facilities of AI. So the benefits of all these, you know, advancements are equally divided or equally achieved by, you know, every nation can get the benefits which these AI and such infrastructure get.
Sakshi, now I would like to draw your attention to the other bilateral meetings which Indian Prime Minister had with the world leaders in Brazil. So Sakshi, I would like to ask you, could you please focus on the important bilaterals which our leader had with the other global leaders?
Prime Minister Modi had some 10 bilaterals. Of them, the major ones were with Prime Minister of UK, then we have Prime Minister of Italy, then with Brazil, Argentina, and many more. So the major ones that was with, for example, with UK, where they talked about that they're going to start the talks on FTA soon, which has been a long pending issue. The second one, which was a good news, that India has agreed to open 2 new consulates. So they are keeping, they're trying to focus on this people-to-people connect, tourism, and other kind of initiatives. Second bilateral, which was very specific and very successful with Italy, with Prime Minister Meloni. There they talked about, first was India and Italy strategic relationship, and then was their 5-year plan from 2025 to 29 vision, which is like they're going to have joint collaborations, programs on issues like trade, science, technology. So it's a very progressive step because two countries are saying we're going to have a vision for next 5 years. So that's very positive to look forward to, and we'll see that what can be done in these areas. Beside that, we had with Brazil, they were one of the foremost thing was that when President Lula said that most of the G20 arrangement that he has done have been inspired how India did it. So that was very heartwarming, being an Indian there and listening to this, that okay, you're in another country, the efforts that Indians and Prime Minister Modi and the team had put, it was being appreciated there. One fourth bilateral that I want to mention is regarding Argentina, because firstly, it's talking about critical minerals, that is lithium. It's one of the biggest sources of lithium. And secondly, you're having a bilateral with Argentina on lands of Brazil. So on that front, Ambassador can expand further. But yeah, that was one major point that should be elaborated here.
Ambassador Rajshekar, Sakshi has already passed on the baton to you. So it's now up to you to take it up from here.
Short take on that is, you know, Argentina and Brazil are two giants in South America. And while Brazil, India, Japan, Germany have teamed together to get into the United Nations Security Council as permanent members, Argentina is on the other side. It's called the Coffee Club, uniting for you know what you call peace. Argentina, Pakistan, South Korea and all. So for us to have a fruitful, meaningful, productive bilateral dialogue with Argentina on Brazilian soil, it holds a lot of political symbolism that we transcend those differences as Vishwa Bandhu and Vishwa Mitra. So that's something to cheer up.
Mr. Aneja, since Ambassador Rajshekar spoke about Guyana, My last destination is also Guyana, like Prime Minister. So after 56 years, Indian Prime Minister visited Guyana and he was conferred with the highest honor there as well. The kind of reception he has received there speaks a lot about India-Guyana relations. So I would first like you to throw some light on the historical ties which both these nations share, like India and Guyana. What has been our past? Could you please speak about it and what will be the future?
Interesting question, Deeksha. Look at the big picture first. You see, after the G20 which we hosted and we pledged to engage with the Global South, we immediately focused on Africa, the entire continent. But now we are adding another geography and it's the entire Caribbean, South America. We ambassadors spoke about Argentina, Brazil. But look at the other geography, 22 nations of CARICOM, Guyana being part of that. We engaged the entire Caribbean region through the visit to Guyana, because it was not just bilateral. We also had 22 other countries coming, or 21 other countries joining the Prime Minister in a very substantial dialogue. That's the important part, the expansion of India's vision and areas, geographies of engagement. That's one. You asked about the historical ties. You know, these were indentured laborers taken, which came after slavery was abolished. And they came, the British Empire, it was the British colonists which brought them. Prime Minister this morning talked about Gonda and Basti as some of the places of origin from there, from where they were taken by the British to Guyana and the other Caribbean islands. And then these people became our ambassadors. They settled here, preserved Indian culture, and that gives us a very strong foundational connect with the mainland. And that was palpable when the Prime Minister visited. The kind of reception you spoke about, the honor which he received, there was an X factor there. It was not just any visitor. There was a deep civilizational blood bond, let's say, between people of Indian origin in Guyana and people going from here. So that is where what makes it so special. And you saw it throughout the duration of the Guyana visit. And then on top of that, CARICOM, but along with that, the economic side of it came into the picture. The oil and gas, which has been discovered in Guyana, that has become a very important vertical. Like Nigeria, Guyana is also part of India's diversifying energy security. And then, you know, our pledge to them on healthcare, on agriculture, you name it, DPI, again, the UPI system. So all, it's a full package which went there to Guyana and the CARICOM countries. So exceptionally important visit, again, coming after 56 years. The Prime Minister made another interesting point that if you look at it geographically, the Caribbean countries become a bridge or a gateway to reach out to South America. So they have a major strategic value as well, apart from, you know, bilateralism, which we spoke about, and India's expanding diplomatic and geoeconomic reach. But they are a gateway to that. So that augurs well for the future. One more point was about the defense cooperation. And, you know, this is an interesting point. We have given some Dorniers to them earlier. But now comes, you know, training will come into the picture. And slowly it can evolve into something very big. India has now become a major manufacturer of defense equipment. We are manufacturing aircraft like the Tejas. So we'll see how it evolves. I don't want to jump the gun, but that is a vertical which has been opened with Guyana. And I suppose it will follow with the other CARICOM countries as well. Major, major area of outreach, far from our shores. You know, we reach out to, in the Indo-Pacific, we reach out to Papua New Guinea, diaspora countries, Fiji. Here we're going to the Caribbean. And that is the reason why other things follow, like membership of the UN Security Council, because we are willing to take global responsibilities. We are first responders to any crisis across the world, whether it is Turkey or it's Nepal or Syria. I mean, we are there. So I think this is a new India. And for me, this visit to Guyana was really mirroring this new India's outreach to the globe.
Since time is running out, I would like to conclude this discussion here. We'll keep following the Indian diplomacy in the days to come. Thank you so much, Ambassador Rajshekhar. Thank you so much, Mr. Atul Aneja. And thank you so much, Sakshi, for being a part of this discussion today.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on key highlights of Prime Minister's visit to Nigeria, Brazil and Guyana. The participants were C. Rajshekhar, former ambassador, Atul Aneja, strategic analyst, and Sakshi Singh, Akashvani correspondent. The moderator was Deeksha Saxena, Akashvani correspondent. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 928-909-4044.